Welcome back for the second hour of the Spencer Wilson Show here on this Friday, September 11th. Happy to have you with us here in the ESPN studios in Northern Nevada. And coming up this hour, we're going to have our pal Sean on the phone right now, actually, to give us his NFL thoughts on the season. But he is out on another job right now, so unfortunately will not be able to join us. But maybe we can we'll see if we can get him on Monday to have him share his Sunday thoughts with us about the first true week of football. But a lot of other stuff to talk about. Of course, we'll have our pal Rick in here, Saxman Rick Metz, a little later on in the hour. We'll talk NHL coming up in the next segment as well. But let's start with racing. Let's start with the action going on the track. Formula One, you don't often get to see new races. And that was kind of the fun thing of looking forward to this season, was that we were scheduled to have two new races on the calendar. There was going to be the Dutch Grand Prix being reborn, essentially, and then you were going to have the first ever Vietnamese Grand Prix as well, coming from Hanoi there in Vietnam on a partial street circuit. So that, I think, was going to be a lot of fun as well. But unfortunately, both of those races got canceled this year. But we do get to have, and we've had some firsts already, but we get to see a new, brand new track in Mugello, which has not been used before. It's been used, I believe it's a track owned by the Ferrari team. So they've done a lot of testing out there. And of course, there's been videos of Michael Schumacher driving around Mugello, going around the internet pretty much all week this week, celebrating Formula One's first official Grand Prix at this track that is located there, I believe, in Tuscany. So it should be a really interesting race. I mean, anytime that you have all of the Formula One teams and all these drivers who, again, a couple of them have done some test drives there on the circuit, but none of them have driven around this three and a quarter mile circuit in Formula One cars getting ready for a race. And having both practice sessions today, drivers seem to be really excited about the circuit. I mean, a lot of the feedback was that this is a serious circuit. I mean, this is one that is going to test you. It has a lot of rolling hills, got some nice wide open fast turns, but also some hard braking ones. I mean, it's going to challenge you for the, I believe, 59 laps, is it? Yeah, 59 laps around this 3 1/4 mile circuit. So it's gonna be testing. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, you can't base everything off of practice sessions, but I think the fact that it wasn't really dominated by Mercedes. I mean, really, Valtteri Bottas had a great day today, as he was top of the timing sheets in both practice sessions. The first practice session, pretty close between him and Verstappen, less than a tenth of a second separated Valtteri Bottas and Max Verstappen there up top. Charles Leclerc, again, this is a track owned by Ferrari, even though Monza and the Italian Grand Prix is kind of seen as Ferrari's home race. This technically is Ferrari's home race with them owning this track. So for Leclerc to come out and be there in third place on the timing sheet after that first practice, I mean, that's more hope than I feel like Ferrari has had at every race so far this season. I mean, for him to be third, and I mean, we weren't sure if it was going to last, but still, that's a great performance from him. And Ferrari going with a little old school livery. They are celebrating their 1,000th Grand Prix as Ferrari this weekend, and they went back to kind of an old-school maroon color type paint job instead of that bright red. So a little bit of a different look from the two Ferrari drivers out there today, but still fun to see Leclerc that. I mean, really, the top four in practice one is kind of what Formula One has been. You know, two Mercedes, a Red Bull, a Ferrari, both up top. And kind of fun to see that. Pierre Gasly, of course, the newest winner, the most recent winner to Formula One, winning at Monza last weekend. Just 7/10 off of Bottas there. Ocon of Renault there in 6th. Kvyat in 7th, just 9/10 back. So the top 7 drivers covered by a second there in the first practice session. Norris, Albon, and Ricciardo rounded out the top 10 there. And unfortunately, Nicholas Latifi of Williams, who is going into their new era as well. This was the first race weekend without either Frank or Claire Williams or anybody of the Williams family being at that team. You know, technically, that team is no longer family-owned now. It's officially into the new, well, I don't know if it's officially into the new owner's hands yet, but essentially Claire and Frank Williams and the Williams family have now officially stepped away from being in charge of the Williams team. So very kind of a strange feeling watching the first two practice sessions earlier today and not seeing Claire Frank Williams in that garage was just it's kind of odd. But nonetheless, George Russell, a fairly good first practice session, finishing 16th. So this is kind of the fun of having a race at the first circuit. No one really knows what to expect, and so to see those results after the first practice, again, kind of gave you hope this is going to be a very intriguing weekend. And even though practice two, kind of a little more by the books with both Mercedes drivers leading the way, it was still Valtteri Bottas on top, 0.2 ahead of his teammate Hamilton. So Valtteri, you know, he had that opening season win there in the Austrian Grand Prix, and just like last season when he had the opening win in Australia, just kind of seemed to fall off after that, and Hamilton's really picked himself up. So Valtteri really kind of seeming like the only man that can, maybe Verstappen, but Valtteri's the only other guy in a Mercedes car. So if he really wants to be the one to challenge Lewis Hamilton and possibly put himself in a championship position, he's got to get a move on, and this could be a great track to ignite that kind of comeback for him this season. With it being a new track, knowing again, it's learning by the session here, by the lap, these teams are getting information and learning, the drivers are doing the same. So this could be that weekend where Valtteri Bottas could turn around this championship charge and maybe, you know, start to make it a little interesting. But it was exciting to see Bottas performing at that level. Hamilton, like I said, finished second. Verstappen finished third. Albon was fourth, and I think that's important. If Albon can get some confidence right now, because he had a great second half of the season last year when he replaced Pierre Gasly coming into Belgium off the summer break, but he has not shown that same kind of form this season. And for anybody, I mean, Red Bull seemed like the only team that could really challenge Mercedes, and if they want to move forward with any kind of a challenge, Albon and Verstappen have to be right there. Both of those drivers, worst comes to worst, that has to be the finish. If Mercedes goes 1-2, you have to go 3-4. And you hope that maybe Verstappen can split those Mercedes and you have Albon finishing fourth. Because Albon just has not been anywhere close to Mercedes or Verstappen this season, and that's going to be a problem in the Constructors' Championship. So if Red Bull, just like Valtteri Bottas, if Red Bull wants to mount any kind of a challenge towards Mercedes, it could start this weekend. It probably needs to start this weekend, and Albon needs to have a good race and finish up close to the front of the pack like Verstappen has been doing, with the exception of Monza last weekend, because that was just a crazy fun race. But the Mercedes going 1-2, Red Bull going 3-4. Those were the four drivers, all within a second of each other. Ricciardo in fifth, 1 second off the leader there. Ocon was all Renault, 5 and 6 there. Then Sergio Perez, Pierre Gasly, Kimi Raikkonen, and Charles Leclerc rounded out the top 10 there in the second practice session. So, again, you can't read too much into practice sessions, really, because you never know what kind of modes people are trying. But, again, confidence there from Valtteri Bottas. Maybe this could be a good weekend for him, and maybe this could be a good weekend for Red Bull as a whole to possibly get back in that championship charge. Because, again, if you look at the standings right now in the Drivers' Championship, it is a 1-2 for Mercedes, with Bottas jumping Verstappen there after the Italian Grand Prix to get back up into second place. But there's almost a 50-point gap between Hamilton and Bottas there, first and second. Hamilton with 164 points, Bottas with 117. So if Bottas, again, wants to try to make some kind of championship charge, got to start this weekend. And even if it goes 1-2, try to get the fastest lap, maybe just try to cut into that lead by 8 points, which is what it would be in terms of 26-18, in terms of points scored by first and second place. So it's not going to be a whole lot, but at this point, just got to try to slowly chip away at that and try to outscore Hamilton at pretty much every race that's left on the calendar. And then the Constructors' Championship, Mercedes, 281 points in first, Red Bull in second with 158. So, I mean, I don't want to sit here and say it's over, but again, almost 130-point differential between these two teams right now. Mercedes just isn't slowing down. You know, I mean, Bottas didn't have the greatest Italian Grand Prix, still managed to finish fifth. And Hamilton going from last all the way up to seventh in that charge after his penalty. I mean, it just feels like it's Mercedes Constructors' Championship to lose, especially, like I said, with almost 130-point lead in the championship right now. But you never know. You never know what can happen. So if you're Red Bull, just try to chip away at the lead the best you can. If you can manage that and see what you can do as we are getting ready for round 9 of what is going to be a 17-round season. So we are essentially over halfway now, and it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this Mugello track really evolves over a race weekend and throughout a race. So it'll be fun. Beautiful circuit too there for the second of 3 races being held in the country of Italy this year. But there was also some interesting news that came out, some driver news that came out. Obviously, with the announcement from Ferrari before the season even started that Carlos Sainz will be taking over for Sebastian Vettel next year to fill out the Ferrari team as Charles Leclerc's new teammate, there was a lot of speculation on what Sebastian Vettel would do. Would he retire? Would he look for a job somewhere else outside of Formula One? Would something open up for Formula One? And the team that really started to take center stage in that conversation was Racing Point, who will be rebranded as Aston Martin next year, and they have officially signed Sebastian Vettel for that season. So the rumors, the expectations pretty much came to fruition. You know, it seemed as though Racing Point was a smart move by both parties to bring Sebastian Vettel there to that team, and they have done that. And they are doing so at the expense of Sergio Perez. Because don't forget, Lance Stroll, who is the other driver for Racing Point right now, his dad, Lawrence Stroll, owns the team. So I doubt that Lance is going to lose his seat, even though they haven't officially announced Sebastian's teammate yet for next season at Aston Martin. I would be hard to believe that if Lawrence Stroll is in charge, that it's not going to be Lance Stroll taking that other seat. So while it's not officially announced yet, I feel like that is going to be the announcement moving forward. And that kind of caught Sergio Perez off guard. He was not expecting to lose his seat there at Racing Point, but, you know, that's life. That's the business. I'm sure Vettel wasn't entirely, you know, ready to lose his Ferrari position either, but that's how it goes sometimes. So that is the first announcement for Aston Martin Racing for next season, which again is just the rebranding of the Racing Point team this year. But Sebastian Vettel will be driving for Aston Martin in Formula One next season. So he will be hanging around. And going to be interesting. Going to be fun. We've had a couple driver announcements so far. I mean, Williams, McLaren, and Ferrari, as well as Renault, have announced, those four teams have announced their entire driver lineup for next season. Renault has Ocon and Alonso. Ferrari has Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. McLaren has Ricciardo and Lando Norris. And then Williams has Latifi and Russell. Of course, Verstappen going back to Red Bull. Bottas has been announced to stick with Mercedes. And now Sebastian Vettel going to Aston Martin. So a fair amount of seats still open. Sergio Perez could maybe find another seat. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But Sergio Perez out at Racing Point in favor of Sebastian Vettel. Some other races going on this weekend. The NASCAR playoffs continue as Kevin Harvick winning last weekend in Darlington has punched his ticket to the second round. Who will do that this weekend in Richmond? This will be the first time this season they are going to the 3/4 mile short oval there in Richmond, Virginia. And I was really excited to see IndyCar at that track this year. But that race got canceled. I just the shape of Richmond, the way cars, the way people can drive and compete at that track. It's very unique. It's very different. So I'm looking forward to the playoff race this weekend there for NASCAR. We'll see if Chase Elliott and Martin Truex Jr. can stay out of each other's way this time. It happens in racing. Truex thought he was clear. He wasn't. He moved up to try to take his line. They touched. I mean, it happens. But for that to happen, Chase Elliott's had some rotten playoff luck in the past. And that was some more rotten luck for him there last weekend in Darlington. So we'll see how this race goes. That race happening tomorrow, September 12th. And that is the Federated Auto Parts 400 there at Richmond Raceway in Richmond, Virginia. So it should be a fun contest there. Anytime NASCAR goes short oval racing, I'm a fan. So I can't wait to see that. And then IndyCar. I thought the doubleheader at Mid-Ohio was canceled or at least postponed. But it seems as though they've been put back on the calendar for this weekend. I mean, there was an announcement a week ago or maybe a week and a half ago that because of COVID spikes in the state of Ohio, they were going to hold off on the races. So I imagine announcement that these are now being put back on the schedule for this weekend. They're going to do a doubleheader with races race tomorrow and a race on Sunday. But I imagine the COVID cases either plateaued or went down a little bit. I mean, they obviously have confidence now to put these two races on the schedule. So we will have a full 14-race season. And, well, man, not a full. I mean, usually they're about 17 races. But they planned 14. We'll get all 14 run as they have a doubleheader this weekend there at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. It's a fun course to watch. Both the courses up there in kind of the northern United States that they use, Road America and Mid-Ohio. I mean, same with Belle Isle as well there in Detroit. Very fun road courses there to watch. So I'm excited these races got put back on the calendar. I'm excited they got put back on the calendar for this weekend. I thought September was going to be the month without an IndyCar race, and that was going to hurt my feelings. But nonetheless, IndyCar out there this weekend for Mid-Ohio with a race tomorrow and a race on Sunday. And we will see if anybody can catch Scott Dixon. He is first right now with 416 points. Joseph Newgarden there in second with 320. And Patricio O'Ward in third with 297. So Scott Dixon comfortably out front there with five races left on the calendar. But that is the racing going on this weekend. Looking forward to that. When we come back, we will talk about the NHL Western Conference Final Game 3 that happened last night, and look forward to the Eastern Conference Game 3 happening today between New York and Tampa Bay. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
The NHL playoffs roll on with their Final Four, their conference final series. We had Game 3 of the Western Conference Final last night, and again, a more offensive game than we've seen, with Dallas winning the first game 1-0. Vegas followed that up 3-0 there in Game 2. This game saw both teams get on the board, which I predicted would happen. But I thought Vegas was going to get the win, and Dallas just ripped it away from them there 31 seconds into overtime. But this was a very entertaining game. I mean, back and forth there in the first period. Really, the first period was a goaltending showcase. Whether it was Robin Lehner knocking pucks away with his stick, whether it was Anton Khudobin just snagging pucks out of the air with his glove. I mean, both goalies just put on a show there in the first period. And both teams are getting some good scoring chances as well, but it was 0-0 after one, and then we got into the second period pretty late. I mean, again, that second period, really the first half of the game, the first 30 minutes was a goaltending showcase. I mean, both teams getting some chances, but it looked like maybe we were going to have another 1-0, 2-0 game with whoever could break through. And then towards the end of the second period, a blocked shot from Dallas led to a breakaway chance. I forget who the defender was, but there was a defender for Vegas that fell down during transition. So Dallas had Jamie Oleksiak pretty much had a wide open one-on-one opportunity with Robin Lehner, and Lehner did a good job of making it tough for him, but Oleksiak just able to pull it back, I believe to his forehand, and trickle it, pretty much just scoot it right past the left skate of Robin Lehner. I mean, this it wasn't something that, you know, he smashed home or it was some kind of quick flip over the pad. I mean, this was a puck that literally just scooted its way right past the left skate of Robin Lehner and into the goal with about 16 or so seconds left in that second period. So Dallas getting a huge momentum swing there towards the end of that middle period and took a 1-0 lead into that second intermission. And the first few minutes of the third period, again, back and forth. But then Shea Theodore on a power play goal, his seventh goal of the season, tied it up. And I thought the puck ricocheted off Klingberg. I think that's who it hit. Some of the announcers were saying it hit off Faxa's stick and went into the net. I don't know which Dallas star it went off of, but that puck changed direction somewhere in about middle of the flight from the ice to the goal. So I'm not sure which Dallas player it went off of, but unfortunately for Anton Khudobin, the puck took a bit of a deflection, got right by him into the net. We were tied at 1-1. And then Jamie Benn, about 4 minutes later, again, a little bit of a breakaway opportunity for Dallas, one-on-one with Robin Lehner, and was just able to squeak it through the pads for the go-ahead goalie, five-hold Robin Lehner. And what was amazing about that is Lehner looked to have that covered, but it was just a split second of his left pad coming a little off the ice and both pads coming just a little bit separated, gave Jamie Benn enough of a gap, five-hole, to put the puck in the back of the net and give Dallas a 2-1 lead. And then that, they had that lead for about a good 5-6 minutes before Alex Tuck got his, what is that, his ninth goal this postseason to tie it up at 2-2. And, of course, it wouldn't be a Vegas playoff series without a little bit of controversy. I don't know why it seems like controversy just always finds Vegas in the playoffs. Not as controversial as some other moments that they've had in their short NHL stand so far. But essentially, Mark Stone was kind of coming from the end boards back up into that goaltender area. He's coming from the right of Anton Khudobin. It came up to him behind him from the right, and as Alex Tuck fired that shot in, it looked as though Mark Stone's skate hit the right skate of Anton Khudobin and essentially affected the way he was able to play that puck. I agreed with the refs. I didn't think there was any need to call that goal off for a couple reasons. One, I felt like Khudobin still had a chance to play the puck, because Mark Stone didn't skate into him, he didn't bump him, he didn't hit him in the head. He just kind of stood right there off to the side of him. And I think, I can't remember the Dallas defender that was right there with him, but it's not like he was guiding Stone away from either. He kind of got his stick stuck between Mark Stone and Anton Khudobin. So I feel like it was kind of just something that happens in hockey. Bodies close to the net. I feel like Khudobin still had a relatively good chance of playing that puck and getting a stop. And one thing that I've always kind of been on the fence about when it comes to hockey, that blue patch of ice, essentially what is kind of the goalie box of hockey, that is the goalie's home. If anybody comes into that blue space, if anyone touches him while he is completely in that blue space, then I think it's goaltender interference. I think where you start to kind of ride that line is when you have 1 foot out of the blue paint and 1 foot in the blue paint. I know that, I think, you know, technically by the rules, if he has 1 foot in the blue paint, it's still technically his, it's his room. It's his area to have priority in. So in this case scenario with Alex Tuck goal and Mark Stone, or Matt Stone, excuse me, the right skate of Khudobin was out of that blue paint area, and his right or his left skate was on the line, really, of the ice and that blue patch. So to me, I mean, that's a goaltender kind of stepping out of their space and trying to play the puck. And if you do that, if you take a little touch on the skate, you take a little bump to the shoulder, that's part of the game. You know, if this happens in that blue ice area, then I say, yeah, that's goaltender interference. But where Khudobin was, where Mark Stone was, the fact that he didn't make any kind of egregious hit or any kind of egregious contact against Khudobin, I agree with the refs there. I don't think it was enough to take the goal off the board. And that essentially tied it up at 2-2. And it was that way all the way through the rest of the third period. Although Dallas had a chance. Jamie Benn had a chance to give Dallas the win there at the end of the game. Another kind of sloppy turnover from Vegas. Dallas turns right around. Jamie Benn is one-on-one with Robin Lehner as the clock ticks down. I think at the start of overtime, they showed the clock hit zero right before Jamie Benn shot the puck, so it wouldn't have counted if it went in anyway. But Dallas there again with a chance to win it at the end of regulation, and Robin Lehner made the save. A little shaken up, but did make the save to keep it 2-2 and force it into overtime. But then it only took Alexander Radulov 31 seconds to get the game-winning goal for Dallas. Again, a breakaway opportunity really for the Stars. Pavelski finds Radulov, and I'll tell you what, the shot that I think looks the slickest in hockey is when someone approaches the goalie
balancing on one skate and then just fires it. I don't know why that looks so slick to me, but I mean, Radulov just approaches liner, cools a cucumber on one skate, and then just rattles a shot off the far post and into the net for the win. I mean, an incredible shot and one that deserved to be a game winner. But Dallas wins game 3-2, takes a 2-1 series lead, and snatches the momentum back from Vegas there in that series. But a really fun game between the two teams. It's starting to feel a little more lively between the two of them. And I think the rest of this series is going to be just like this. Both teams getting a couple goals, getting on the board, but it's going to be tight, it's going to be close, and it's going to be fierce. So looking forward to at least the next two games, if not more, after that. But we did have an incredible shutout streak ended in this game. Jamie Oleksiak's goal there in the second period ended a 170-plus minute shutout streak that Robin Lehner had put together since allowing the first goal in very early on in game one of the series there with Dallas. And he has now set that was the longest shutout streak this postseason. The other two weren't even close. Thatcher Demko of Vancouver, just over 138 minutes. And then Semyon Varlamov of the Islanders, just right around again 138 minutes. So Robin Lehner putting in a great performance there for Vegas. Just unfortunately went up against the Dallas team that had it all figured out last night, especially their 31 seconds into overtime. Not going to have to wait long there for that game winner. But looking forward now to game 3 tonight between the Lightning and the Islanders. Tampa Bay, of course, with that massive 8-2 win in game 1. The Islanders coming back and making it a lot closer in game 2. If it wasn't for Nikita Kucherov's goal with 8 seconds left on the clock, could have gone to overtime. Maybe New York gets the win there. But nonetheless, Tampa Bay has that 2-0 lead as they get set for game 3. Alex Killorn will not be there. He was suspended for this game after the boarding call on Brock Nelson there in game 2. Which, if you haven't seen it, I mean, any shot from behind in any sport's going to be gnarly. But, man, in hockey, it's such a fine line between getting that shot in and having it be a little dirty. But nonetheless, Alex Killorn will miss the Game 3 tonight for the Lightning. And I think with the way the Islanders bounced back there from Game 1 to Game 2, they looked like the more focused team in Game 2. They just had a lapse of concentration there at the very end. But I think they're getting back into that rhythm that we've seen them be in. And I think the Islanders are going to win Game 3 tonight. I think they get a little bit of momentum back against Tampa Bay. They make the series 2-1 and give themselves a little bit of life. So I think the Islanders get the Game 3 win tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But we are going to go to break. When we come back,
yes. It
is Friday, yes. Which means the one and only sax man Rick Metz
the sax man's in the house.
Is here in studios. You'll have him after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back inside the studio. It is Friday. The sax man Rick Metz is here.
I'm here.
He is here.
I'm here. We got a lot of stuff to cover. Let's rock right
we
into
do.
It, brother.
I'll let you go.
Okay, well, we were talking last week about the late, great Tom Seaver, who passed away about a week and a half ago. As a longtime New York Mets fan, growing up in New York City, Tom Seaver was always my favorite ball player, and I have a bat that I've had since I was a kid that's got his number 41 on it, et cetera, et cetera. The original Tom Terrific, the only Tom Terrific in my book, also known as the franchise, passed away at 75 years old. Here, let me just run his stats down really quick since we didn't get a chance to run them all by last week.
Okay.
Rookie of the year in 1967, runner-up to McCovey for MVP that year as a rookie, elected to the Hall of Fame in 92, in his first year eligible with 98.84% of the votes, the highest percentage of votes ever at the time, 425 of 430 ballots had him on the ballot. Hank Aaron Stern said he was the toughest pitcher he ever faced. Won three Cy Youngs, 69, 73, and 75. 12-time All-Star, 1969 World Champion. The Mets' first winning season since 1962, since their inception. He had 25 wins that season. 300 wins collectively across his career. 18th all-time and the all-time leader for the Mets. Those were the stats we got to. Here's some other stats we didn't get a chance to get to. 3,640 strikeouts for sixth all-time. Led the league in strikeouts five times. Led the league in wins and ERA three times. 61 shutouts in his career. 2.86 ERA in his career. He had one no-hitter in 1978. Unfortunately, he was traded to the Reds in 77. Pitched for the White Sox and the Red Sox and the Reds before being traded back to the Mets in 82. Played 20 years total. And here's my favorite stat of the whole thing. Both Tom Seaver and Walter Johnson, the big train from the Washington Senators, one of the legendary pitchers of all time, were the only pitchers with 300 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, and an ERA under 3.
Wow.
Is that amazing? Tom Seaver, rest in peace, brother.
I mean, you don't get the nickname Tom Terrific if you're not terrific.
Exactly. The only Tom Terrific in my book.
Amen.
Did you watch the Derby?
I did watch the Derby.
The Run for the Roses, baby. The fastest 2 minutes in all of sports.
It was awesome.
Authentic was the first wire-to-wire winner since War Emblem in 2002.
Great name, that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. Definitely so. Now, earlier this week, we had some interesting baseball stuff going on, baby.
Oh, my goodness.
Wednesday, okay, two games that set records all across the board. The Braves beat the Marlins 29-9.
Yeah, that's not a typo, folks.
No.
29 runs were scored.
29-9. Tied for the second highest runs scored since 1900, which is the beginning of the modern era. Most runs scored since 1883. It was the largest loss in Marlins history, 20-run loss. Braves got 11 runs in the second inning. First team to score 22 runs through five innings since the 78 Blue Jays. First team since 1900 to score 25 runs through six innings. First win, the Braves' first win plus runs since 1898 when they were known as the Boston Bean Eaters.
Oh, my gosh.
The first 29-9 score in Major League Baseball history. The most runs scored ever in a game, 30 by the Rangers in 07 versus the Orioles. And then this another game that afternoon.
That same day,
the Brewers beat the Tigers 19-0 behind 21 hits. That's a lot of hits, baby.
That's a lot of hits.
First team to win by 19 runs in a shutout since 2010. The Brewers beat the Pirates 20-0.
So the Brewers
did it again.
I was going to say, the Brewers, man.
Only the eighth time since 1969, the beginning of the divisional era, that there was a shutout win by 19 runs. And it was the first time since July 4th, 1884, that multiple teams won by 19-plus runs.
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about some stats.
Talk about a day in baseball, man.
Oh, yeah, big time. That was crazy. Absolutely crazy.
If you were ever looking for some offense, that was the day
to
watch
baseball. That was a day of offense. Speaking of offense, here, a momentous occasion in baseball history. Mike Trout hit his 300th home run, setting the franchise record for the Angels. He was the fastest ever to 300 home runs and 200 stolen bases. I mean, talk about stats for the week.
I was going to say.
This is an all week long worth of stats.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Let's get to football. Wasn't it nice to watch football last night?
Was that not just fantastic?
I mean, it was so much fun.
I mean, for the season to start on time, it felt like the only normal thing this year.
Yep, exactly. Well, you know, and I don't want to go into anything beyond this, but I have to say that I was very disappointed in the Kansas City Chiefs game, Chiefs fans before the game.
There was, yes.
Very
disappointed,
but let's not touch on that. It's
we don't
not
have
our
to.
Place.
It's not. We don't have to get political. We
it's,
can inform the people
that it's
not
our place,
if,
but I was disappointed, needless to say.
Yes.
Okay?
It was.
That's all I need to say about
it
that.
It was a disappointing, not from all the fans,
right, but
just
the
from
ones
some.
That did,
but
the reaction was very disappointing.
Yes, it was disappointing.
So let's talk about Adrian Peterson for a moment.
Okay.
Going to the Lions.
Yeah.
Getting released by the Washington football team, getting picked up by the Lions. He had over 900 yards with Washington last season, which is an interesting stat because he's 1,053 yards behind the great Barry Sanders for fourth all-time on the all-time rushing list.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Do you think with Detroit this year, do you think he can past Barry Sanders?
He's going to be a secondary back. He's not going to be the main guy. Kerryon Johnson has that main role, but he's the kind of downhill runner that the Lions have been needing for a while. Kerryon Johnson has the moves. He has the ability to get outside, inside. Adrian Peterson, at this point in his career, is more of a downhill runner, and he will serve that purpose well. I think the guy is ageless, and I think he's going to hang around long enough to get past Barry and see how long he lasts to get higher up on that list.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. I absolutely respect Adrian Peterson, especially after the surgery he had on his knees years back to come back to the league and to do what he's done since that point.
Yeah, I mean, they don't call you all day for nothing.
Exactly.
He can go all day.
He can go all day. The man is just ageless. Yeah. I love it. Absolutely love it. So another interesting thing that I found is that Fitzmagic, Ryan Fitzpatrick, named the Dolphins starter over Tua Tagovailoa.
Yep.
You know, I'm putting the over-under on how long that'll last at half the season. I'm giving it 8 games.
I'll go way under on that.
Now, I really think that Fitzpatrick has got the opportunity to school Tua and let Tua get a little bit of experience sitting behind him, because the Dolphins are not going to be contending this year. I hate to say it to all you Dolphins fans, but I don't think they're going to be contending. And I am picking the Dolphins for the major upset of the week over the Patriots.
Because interesting.
The Dolphins are 3-3 against the Patriots in the last 3 years.
They are. You know what? We had Terry on the first hour. We gave our week one picks, and we both went with New England for one reason, really.
Yeah.
This game's happening in Foxborough.
Right.
If this game was happening in South Beach, I think I would have gone
with
Miami as well. But in Foxborough, the Patriots are a little more resilient.
I'm taking the upset. I'm not giving it an outright win, but I would take the points.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I definitely see the Dolphins putting up a good fight, because they always do against the Patriots.
Who, before I tell you maybe who I'm picking to win that division this year, because New England, not the same team as they've been, obviously, this season.
No.
Who would you say are you leaning towards as the favorite to win the AFC East this year?
You know, I honestly can't pick between the Bills and the Patriots. Before Cam Newton was signed, I had the Bills all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Once Cam Newton was signed and he's proven that he's healthy,
yeah,
I really think that Bill Belichick is such an amazing coach. Much as I hate to admit it, he is truly one of the top coaches of all time. I wouldn't put him number one, but really close.
Yeah.
I'd put him up there in that top five with like Lombardi and guys like that. He's one of the all-time greats. I really think that this is Belichick's chance to prove to everybody that it wasn't Brady.
Yeah, that's kind of – I mean, I had a hard time kind of picking between that. I mean, I went with Buffalo as my favorite to win the division. My biggest question with New England wasn't necessarily the offense, because I think it was smart to go with Cam Newton.
Right.
And I think Belichick can get a little more creative with Cam than he could with Tom Brady.
Right.
My big concern is the defense.
That defense was awesome the first half of the season, but the second half of the season, they kind of fell apart.
And now they're missing stars.
Can they regain their form from the first half of the season, minus the people that aren't there anymore, because they have lost a lot of players.
And they're missing some huge names on that defense. So that was my only thing. I feel like Belichick can get that offense up and moving, but I'm worried about them stopping opponents.
I can say that I honestly think that both of those teams will make the playoffs, especially with a 7-team format this year.
Yes, we are entering
the new realm. The new door, man.
The
three wild card playoffs. So I definitely think that, you know, whichever team wins the division, obviously, is in the playoffs, but the other team will make it in the playoffs in the new 7-team format.
Okay.
You know,
nice.
Unless, of course, you know, the Patriots fall completely apart and do not perform.
I mean, it could happen.
It's the Bills' division to lose.
All right.
I would put it that way.
I like it.
Definitely put it that way. Another interesting development this week, Mitchell Trubisky named the Bears starter over Nick Foles. How long you think that's going
to
last?
I don't know. I have nothing to prove. I have nothing against Trubisky.
Nor do I.
But he's had plenty of time.
Nor do I.
You have a Super Bowl MVP now on that team.
Right.
Why would you not go with him?
You know, according to the coaching staff and according to everybody that was talking, Trubisky earned the spot.
Yeah.
And if he earned it, he earned it.
True.
Because Foles was fighting hard to get it, and if he would have earned it, he would have gotten that nod. I do think that the Bears staff... leaned a little bit towards Trubisky. I think they could have been a little biased in his favor because they want him to prove himself, because he's truly the future of the franchise if he can prove himself.
So how many games would you give him then? If you had to say you get this many games this season to show us that you can be the starter moving forward, where would you draw that line for
Trubisky? I'm not
going to
put a number, but let's put it this way. He's on a short leash.
All right.
He's on a very short leash. If he shows that he is incapable of bringing the Bears to wins in the first quarter of the season, mm-hmm. there's a good chance he's out after four games, if
so
not sooner.
Detroit could be a nice kind of feeler for that. I mean, it is week one off a season that has no preseason, but
right.
this is not a Detroit team that is really set up to blow anybody away.
Matthew Stafford, so, though, was on fire at the beginning of last season.
Yeah,
I've lost
any kind of confidence in Stafford being any kind of
he's a
great quarterback, but he's not putting anything together for Detroit.
I have a lot of friends that are long-standing Lions fans,
yeah.
long-suffering Lions fans, and all I can say is I wish you guys the best. I truly do. Hey, with a 17 playoff format,
I was going to say,
there's some of the talking heads that are saying the Lions could get in as one of those three wild cards.
And even, you know, the NFC North, I don't see. I mean, Green Bay, I think. I mean, I picked Green Bay. Terry picked Minnesota. But I don't think anybody's really running away with that division. So
it's going to be a toss-up between Green Bay and Minnesota with the Lions, you know, sniffing hot at their tails.
Yeah, all right.
You know, I if Stafford and the team can play up to what they did in the first half of the season last year.
All right.
You know, that's a big one. Clowney goes to the Titans.
Yep.
I thought he was going to go to the Saints.
I did too.
Yeah, and he was asking for $25 million when he, at the beginning, you know, of the free agency period, and he wound up with $12 million. He could have gotten more from the Seahawks if he just would have stayed.
Yeah.
They offered him a bigger chunk of change, and he thought that the market was going to be able to support what he wanted.
Nope.
Obviously not.
No.
But I do think
if you're going to leave Seattle, Tennessee's not a bad team to go to.
Nope, Tennessee.
I mean,
I think
they'll be division contenders. I think they'll be a wild card team, if nothing else. So
yeah.
not a bad team to be with.
Yeah, but, you know, I said it last year, the Titans quarterback, you know.
Yeah.
He had a great season last year.
He did.
Kirk Cousins had a great season, you know, a couple of years ago. There's a lot of quarterbacks that have a great season and get signed.
I was
going to
say, who was the guy that got the job in Denver because he had a great season and lost it after 1 year?
Exactly.
I blank on his name,
exactly,
but yeah.
Exactly.
We'll see.
You know, it's a matter of continuity and consistency. We'll see how that all pans out.
Yeah.
Definitely
it'll
see
be
how
interesting.
That all pans out. I think one of the most amazing things I saw in the NFL this last week, and one of the most heartwarming things I saw this last week, Alex Smith made the Washington football team roster.
Hallelujah.
Oh, man. I know we talked about this on a show a couple of months ago, and I don't know if you guys saw the ESPN special on Alex Smith's recovery.
If you haven't and you have an ESPN Plus subscription, you can go watch it. I urge you to do so.
It is stunning what that man went through. How many surgeries in the 30s? Oh. Over 30 surgeries to save his leg?
Yeah.
You know, and now he's made the roster. He hasn't gotten a hit yet.
No.
But he's made the roster. And having that kind of experience on that roster for Dwayne Cousins is huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see whether they go with how that kind of plays out. Have they announced a starter?
They announced Dwayne Haskins.
So
that
Haskins
was the next
is going to be the starter. Okay.
Dwayne Haskins is the flat-out starter
for the
Washington football
team.
They're not going to contend this year.
No.
I saw the numbers that people were putting out, the predictions for wins this season, and Washington is down near in the bottom five, you know, with a possibility of four to six wins in that general area.
Yeah.
But Dwayne Haskins has a lot of learning to do, and Alex Smith is the guy to teach him.
Yeah.
He's been around the league a long time. He's got the benefit of many years of experience, and he's going to be able to help Dwayne Haskins get to where he needs to. I'm just so happy for Alex Smith.
Yeah, it is.
Folks, go back and watch that show on ESPN if you can find it. It was a 30 for 30,
wasn't
it?
It was. I believe it was.
Yeah, I believe it was a 30 for 30.
Or no, it was a, I think it was an
E60.
E60.
But just, I mean, and there's some graphic photos in there.
There are. I mean, prepare yourselves.
Alex Smith's leg. I mean,
but it's worth it.
It's well worth
it's
it.
It's an amazing
the
watch.
Story and his perseverance.
Oh yeah,
and the work he's put in to get himself back into football shape.
Just ridiculous.
Just being able to walk.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable what that man has done. I am so happy for him. I am so proud of him. Can you tell I'm gushing?
Yes, I can.
I'm a little beside myself. I'm totally gushing. This man has worked so hard.
Oh my gosh,
it's just amazing. I'm so happy for him.
And that's a positive note to go out on.
That's a total positive note to go out on. Always a pleasure to be here, my friend. AFL football happening this weekend. We're getting close to the end of the regular season for the Australian Football League. And
there you
I'm
go.
Really excited. So we'll talk about that next week and see what's going on.
I love it. You have a great weekend, my man. Thank you so much for being in here.
Brother, thank you. Always a pleasure. The Sax Man cometh and the Sax Man goeth. I'm done.
He is the Sax Man, Reek Metz. We'll be back to close out the show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, that is the show. Big thank you to our pal Saxman Reek Metz for coming in here and having a conversation with us, sharing all of his fun baseball stats. And thank you to our pal Terry as well for coming on and enjoying the football conversation, giving him his week one picks and also playoff predictions there. You can follow me on Twitter at @my2spenceworth. And don't forget, a packed day of NBA and NHL playoffs. We got Nuggets and Clippers tipping off at 3:30. Celtics and Raptors game 7 at 6 o'clock. I'm going Clippers and Celtics today. And then game 3 of the Eastern Conference finals on the ice between the Lightning and the Islanders. I think New York gets a win in the series today in game 3. But that is the show. Have a safe weekend out there. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the sports. And we'll talk on Monday. Peace.